Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, September 6, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. I have Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
That would be myself and I.
And I should mention, I also have in the luxurious Minter Studios here, my son Alex. So you may hear him right now.
He can't say hi?
Right. Can you say hi? Can you say hi, Alex? He's giving me something.
I guess.
Okay.
I guess not.
He'll say hi on his own time. There you go.
There you go.
So anyway, in between, he's like, he'll play with stuff for a while, and then he'll get bored, and then he'll want me to give him something new. So, yeah, and he really, really likes my microphone. Yes, look. Yes. Look at the microphone, yes. So this may be a very short show if we can't, as he knocks the microphone on its side.
Well, there we go.
Look.
Yes. We're doing great.
Yeah.
So far. Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Hey.
I'm doing good, too.
Oh, wait, I'll make it so he can hear you. Okay, talk to Yvonne, Alex.
Hey, Alex, how you doing? You doing all right?
He's looking at the computer.
Yeah, I know. I'm crazy, and I'm crazy, and I'm on the phone. Yes, I know. But, hey, it is what it is.
It is indeed. So, okay, Alex, stop licking the microphone. And let me let me talk to Yvonne.
It's not a lollipop, Alex.
Okay, wait, here.
Oh, boy, that didn't work too well.
How about this? Yeah, no.
Well, as Sam goes over there and, tries to control his firstborn child, let me mention that we got some feedback, okay, which I don't have in front of me.
Oh, you want to read it?
I did read it. Well, I didn't. I don't have it in front of me, but I do recall what it was.
Okay, so.
And the gist of the feedback was.
Wait, let me read it. I do have it in front of me.
Want to read it verbatim?
I will read it verbatim. So. Or I will try. Hey, look, ball.
It wasn't so bad, the feedback. It's okay.
So, feedback.
We're not getting fired.
Okay, sit with me. Here, come here. Come here. And here, you like this. Play with this. Yeah, there you go. Okay. So this is from Cynthia, one of our regular listeners, and full disclosure, my sister. So she says, feedback as requested, and this is feedback actually from a couple shows ago, because I got this, between when we, had one show out and we'd recorded the other one but hadn't published it yet. Anyway, feedback as requested. Just wanted to throw in my two cents that I have as well abandoned Facebook and deleted my profile. My friends and I have realized that technology is a poor substitute for more tangible forms of interaction like writing letters or actually being together. Also, I was wondering if you guys could talk a bit about how long it will be before smartphones take over the entire cell phone market. My phone is on its deathbed, and I'm pretty sure I will still be able to find a replacement simple, not smartphone, when it dies. But I'm worried about my chances of finding such a phone in a couple more years. I do not want internet access on my phone, and I do not want my phone to do anything except call and text. Am I still going to have that option for a while, or is it fading fast? So let's take these two points first. The first is Facebook.
Well, first of all, can I please mention that I'm shocked that your sister is basically writing off the entire interweb?
Let's talk about. I know. Here. There you go. Okay, let's talk about the first things first and second things second. So I agree, but let's talk about that next. So the abandoning Facebook and. Okay, I'll pick you up.
I would have thought that for a much younger generation, that would be tougher.
Yeah, well, and look, here's my immediate reaction to that. Of course.
Now, I don't disagree with her feedback, okay, by the way. Just don't get me wrong. I do agree.
Just surprised. Well, look.
I'm just surprised.
Here's the thing. There is absolutely no question whatsoever that in-person interactions are a better quality of interaction than, going back and forth on Facebook to somebody. But here's the thing. And maybe this isn't entirely true in some of the culture, for some of the cohorts of youth who have sort of become Facebook addicts. But at least for, you know, for me and for a lot of people, Facebook is not a substitute for those interactions. It is an addition.
But it is for a number of people.
No, no, I recognize that, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I'll tell you, from my point of view, like, all of these people I hear about on Facebook are not people where if I didn't hear about them on Facebook, I would go out to dinner with them or send them an email or call them or whatever. 99% of the people who I'm friended with on Facebook and I see what's coming up, if I was not friended with them on Facebook, I would have no interaction whatsoever. I would have no idea what the hell these people were doing, and I probably wouldn't think about it too much. And I know. And what? Come here. One question is, of course, how much does that matter? Like, you know, look, a lot of these folks are people I went to high school with that I had no contact with whatsoever from the moment I graduated high school until I, you know, found them on Facebook or they found me on Facebook, you know, in the last year or two. And, you know, I didn't know what was up with these people. For the most part, I wasn't worrying about it a lot. But on the other hand, I find, you know, knowing this kind of stuff, you know, doing their updates. Yes, I know, Alex. Sort of interesting. I mean, would I die if it was gone? No. But, you know, it's sort of like, oh, yeah, that guy's doing that now. That's kind of interesting, I guess. And every once in a while, there's something that's worth, you know, commenting on or going back and forth on. And, you know, it means there's, you know, some interaction where there would have been none. It's not substituting out for, you know, an in-person reaction that I'm no longer doing.
Well, no, I agree, but the point is that for most people, that's not what they do.
Okay, so tell me.
I think that there's a lot of people who are basically using this as a substitute for actual real social interaction. It's like the same reason I see a lot of fucking people that fucking text only and don't or email and don't actually call people they really need to find out something from.
Well, I don't know. There's that texting thing is another argument. Yes, Alex, I know.
I think we may need to take a short break.
talk for a second.
Well, as I was going to mention, I think that for a lot of people, they do take it as a substitute for a real social interaction. And actually use it to avoid.
Well, you know, I don't know about the use. Well, I can definitely.
Yeah, because they need to talk to somebody, and instead of really trying to find out what the fuck is going on, well, I don't really want to talk to that person, but I'll make it that I did the job that I was supposed to communicate with them by just sending them an email or just sending them a text. And, you know, if they don't respond, well, okay, well, you know, so be it.
I can definitely see that in certain cases. I can see that in certain cases. And
I see that in a lot of cases. Okay, so it's just, I wish it was certain. It's more than that. But, you know, I think that, yeah, a lot of people are substituting these mediums for actual live social interaction. I mean, shit, there was an article I just saw this week in the New York Times, for heaven's sakes, the fucking Japanese guys that are going out to these resorts to be having virtual dates with, like, some fucking computer-generated women, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, okay, look, you know, look, and I guess that, and then you get a lot of people that are doing the wasting their time playing the Farmvilles and stuff that we've talked about before too, and that's an entirely different kind of thing. But you know, for the most part, right. Like I see a lot of like if I look at Amy and her Facebook interaction, a lot of it is stuff that, well, I don't know. Some of it's texting as well. I mean, I definitely see some of what you're talking about in terms of texting or email instead of in-person conversation, sort of in work contexts and even in some personal contexts. But I know in a lot of cases, like, you know, the texting back and forth instead of calling somebody, you know, is, you know, it's quicker, easier, more convenient. You can do it while you're multitasking and doing other things. And the same thing applies to the kind of texting back and forth that just happens to happen with, you know, Facebook as an intermediary or IM or anything else. They're all just texting in one form or another. And You know, and I don't necessarily think that's bad. You know, it's just yes,
I think it's bad when people use it to avoid actual communication. I don't think there's a problem with me texting certain people when I'm in a meeting or I'm in a situation where I can't really talk, so I just want to get a message out. The problem that I find is that a lot of people use it to actually avoid communication. They use it to try to feign that they've actually done communication, but they really didn't.
So I'll give you an example, though, like, and this will probably make you, like, slap your head, but you won't be surprised either. I mean, like, you know, if I'm downstairs in my office and it's time for dinner, you know, 9 times out of 10, no one, like, comes downstairs and tells me it's time for dinner. I get a text.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, not at all. A text or an IM or whatever saying dinner, and then I come upstairs.
Okay. Your kitchen's upstairs?
Yeah, we have two.
Are you in the basement?
The downstairs has a family room and my office and a laundry room and, you know, that kind of stuff. And the upstairs has bedrooms, living room, kitchen, stuff like that.
The kitchen's upstairs. Okay, that's an unusual arrangement. Okay. All right.
Well, it's actually not. It's a split level, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's actually fairly normal for this type of house.
For that type of area, I mean, so you'd have to, if you get the groceries, you have to walk up a flight of stairs in order to take them upstairs.
Yeah, like when you come in the entryway, you're not on either floor.
Yeah.
You either go up or down, but they're always stairs.
Okay, I gotcha. Okay, now I gotcha. You're in a relatively hilly area, I assume.
Yes.
Okay, all right, that explains that. Okay, all right, now I understand. Okay, I'm sorry, I've never been to Sam's place. And neither has he been to my place.
Nope.
Which is kind of fucked up, given that we both known each other for this fucking long, and we actually have not been to where we live. That doesn't mean we haven't seen each other the last couple of years. It just means that we haven't been to where each of us lives.
We haven't seen each other the last couple of years either, Yvonne.
We saw each other, I think it was like, at least 5 years ago.
Yes.
Maybe less than that.
I think the last time we saw each other was our friend Al's wedding.
No, it was more recent than that.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're getting off topic.
Anyway, we're getting off topic, but the point of the whole thing is that I think that you know, this whole social interaction thing is just bullshit. But going to the other subject that you said about the smartphone.
Let's take a break because we've been over 10 minutes, and then we'll talk about smartphones when we get back. We'll be right back.
Way to health, said the CDC to me. Wash hands to be safe and healthy. The second way to health, said the CDC to me. Bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The third way to health, said the CDC to me. Manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The fourth way to health, said the CDC to me. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The fifth way to health, said the CDC to me. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The sixth way to health, said the CDC to me. Fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The seventh way to health, said the CDC to me. Get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The eighth way to health, said the CDC to me. Get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The ninth way to health, said the CDC to me. Monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The tenth way to health, said the CDC to me. Practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The 11th way to health, said the CDC to me. Prepare dinner safely, practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy. The 12th way to health, said the CDC to me. Eat well and get moving, prepare dinner safely, practice fire safety, monitor the children, get your vaccinations, get exams and screenings, fasten belts while driving. Be smoke-free. Don't drink and drive, manage stress, bundle up for warmth, and wash hands to be safe and healthy.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
Okay, we're back. So the second question was about smartphones. Why don't you give your take on it first, Yvonne?
Well, my take is it's going to take a while. The reason isn't so much because maybe in our marketplace in the U.S., smartphones aren't going to really overtake most of – I mean – I see most people right now that they don't even get just a plain phone. It's usually a messaging phone with a keyboard, some kind of web access, even if it's a basic one.
Well, yeah, and this is the thing that the middle tier is are called feature phones, right?
Right.
And that basically means, you know, that their camera has other stuff going on. Maybe it can play music. Maybe it's got a camera.
Correct.
But it's not like a full-fledged smartphone like the Android phones or iPhones or whatever. But it's certainly got more than just calling and texting. And I want to point
that
out
is
too.
Correct.
I want to point out too, by the way, that the texting itself at one point was sort of a feature that was not on the basic phones. But
that's correct.
At this point, Cynthia points out in her feedback that's sort of. Yeah, when she says basic phone, she's including texting.
Right, but actually most phones, even the older ones, like original GSM phones going back over 10 years, always including texting, because texting actually was more popular outside of the U.S. than inside the U.S., so Europeans used it a lot more, and Asians of other countries, so they did include texting, it's just that we didn't use it that much.
Yeah, it didn't really catch on here in massive...
The other day somebody referred to as the 1900s. Oh, so that movie was in the 1900s.
Yeah.
You know, just to make you feel better. In the 1900s it didn't catch on. It caught on in the 2000s.
Yeah, and it really got a big boost when you had actual keyboards instead of, number pads. But
right.
But, there are a lot of people still texting on number pads, as well, probably including my sister. I don't know.
That's correct. Now the one thing is that given that the in terms of actual units sold throughout the world, it is still by far the way that most of these countries are getting cell phone access to a lot of these places is by basic phones.
Yep.
You will still see a very good availability of a number of basic phones available for an extended period of time. Because those are the kinds of phones that you always see in those countries. I mean, I've bought some of those in those countries and brought them over here. They're usually unlocked GSM phones that are available that you can pick up. You put a SIM card in it, boom, you're gone. I mean, shit, I picked up one last year. My gosh, I mean, I'd never seen such a basic phone in my life. I didn't know they made them like that anymore.
Yeah.
It was a Motorola phone. It was a slim chocolate bar phone. The display wasn't even color. It was an LED black and white screen, okay, with huge letters, huge block letters. It did get texting. It did. You could save phone numbers on it.
Right.
But it was just like, I mean, you were looking at like one of these old 20-year-old adding machine displays, okay,
right.
Is what you were looking at on it. But they still make tons of those because those are the phones that are being sold in a lot of other markets in order to make cell phone usage accessible. So I think that you'll still have a pretty good, decent period of time when those kinds of phones continue to be accessible.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be a long time until you can't – what'll happen is sort of you'll get creep. Like the basic phone that you get when you go to your phone provider – to get, you know, what's the free phone I can get with a plan without anything, you know? That phone is going to get more and more features over time. I mean, and the basic phones will still be more basic, but there is going to be creep in there. I mean, and at some point you'll get to the point where if you want a really basic phone that has nothing, you're going to have to get it in some sort of special way because they're just not going to have it in stock. Now, we are probably talking a little while before we get there because there's still a lot of people, you know, like that. I do find myself kind of surprised, and we'll talk more about this in a second, to hear this coming from a 20-something as opposed to coming from a 60 or 70-year-old person who's like, that's too complicated for me. I just want to make phone calls. Of course, a lot right. of the and those people are just sort of coming around maybe to the idea that, you know, a cell phone instead of a landline might be okay, but they still just want a phone. And their intention is sort of to never actually use it except, you know, maybe in an emergency or something. I've heard
Look,
that.
Look, I'm looking at right now on online on AT&T, okay? The Nokia 2230, all right? I mean, you talk about a simple phone. It actually does have – it has a color screen, but it's a simple phone, just keys. It's got – it says it's got mobile email, but it's really – I mean
– But you know it's a very small display. So much it's got no keyboard. Use it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you know. So, yes, hi again, Alex. You want to give me this? Yvonne
yes.
says hello.
Yes, I say hello, 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 hello.
So the other reaction I just can't help having at this question is, are you kidding me? Really? You know, like. Okay.
Do you want to have a phone with that? Well, I don't know. You know what? Let me tell you something. I've debated this a little bit. I'll tell you why. Because it used to be that my key feature on having a phone was to have the smallest fucking phone possible. Okay? Yeah. Now, granted, the iPhone is relatively small, but it is actually bigger, I believe, than the old StarTAC I had.
Okay.
It is. I mean, if the old folded StarTAC I had was actually a smaller device than this, and so I'm a little bit like, you know, this creep on larger phones. I saw the freaking Droid X, and that phone's enormous. I said, there's no fucking way I'd own one of those things. It's too big. Yeah, it's great. It's got an enormous screen. Yeah, sure, it's got an enormous screen. Try to stick that damn thing in your pocket.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there is a certain level of like where I want portability and like basically unobtrusiveness on a phone. And honestly, the most I do with a phone is actually talk. Okay.
Yeah. And
see, still
that,
do.
And we've talked before that, like, to a lot of people, that's unusual. I mean, it's certainly true for me, and a lot of people I've talked to are like, phone calls? I don't make phone calls on my phone, you know? I mean, my phone is primarily an email and web device. It's just, you know, a bonus that it happens to have a phone too. You know, like, if my phone didn't do this stuff, I would be buying a second device that did, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
and I could live with a very small phone, by the way, that had just Bluetooth capability that just allowed me to send, receive calls and have some other device in which I got my messaging, my email, my stuff and whatever the hell it was.
Yeah. And so.
And music and everything else.
And like I'm trying to think in my head. And by the way, Cynthia, if you're listening here, I would love to have an additional feedback from you, either an email or if you want to join us in a future show, just let me know and we'll set that up. But, you know, to understand why you don't want these features on a portable device that you can keep with you, like a phone. And, you know, I think to myself, what might be those reasons? And the number one thing I can come up with is distraction. You know?
And I agree with her on that. I got to tell you, I mean, you know, we've been talking about this and my wife and everybody. It's so, you know, these fucking devices have made social interactions not as good as they used to be. The fucking people, I mean, and I'll blame myself sometimes for it, even though I avoid it a lot. Fucking people were at a fucking dining room table. My God, see four fucking people looking at their damn phones.
I do that all the time. We'll go out to dinner, and all three of us are sitting there on our phones doing one thing or another. Sometimes we'll be playing games with each other via our phones, and that comes back to a social interaction thing. But I'm telling you, even without that, I could just see that even if you're alone, let's say, the distraction factor is there because, like, you know, if let's say I'm alone by myself, and you know, it's just really easy to believe, pull out the phone, check my RSS feeds on the news, play a game, whatever. Whereas if I didn't have that...
Well, like, I'll give you an example. Like, you know, you talked about being alone and doing something. While I was waiting for a slice of cheesecake that I was purchasing for my wife, which is why I was running late, okay, I played you on Words with Friends.
Yeah, and I've got a number of games of that pending right now. But yeah, like that kind of thing, like what I think of, okay, if I did not have the smartphone, if I did not have all these games in my pocket, all this, you know, music, games, internet in my pocket, what would I do? Hey, you know, maybe I'd read a book. You know, my book reading has plummeted.
Well, now, I will admit that I probably would not be reading a book while I'm fucking waiting for a cheesecake.
Well, maybe not, but maybe you know you're at home and maybe instead of
I didn't do it before, I wouldn't fucking do it now.
Now, you know, I have read books while I'm out in restaurants by myself and stuff like that. But anyway, like, but
I'm usually not carrying them. I wasn't carrying it today.
Let me finish. That's one bad example.
Okay, all right, I got you.
For me, it's a good example. Maybe I would read more. Maybe I would, like, even if I'm at home, like, maybe instead of fiddling with whatever on my phone, at home there are other distractions. I've got the whole computer. I've got, like, you know, television and stuff too. But, you know, there's a half dozen different projects that it would be nice if I spent time on. Hell, I could just, you know, work on cleaning the damn house. But, you know, instead, let me play Words with Friends, you know, or whatever, you know. And it does suck that time. Now, is a lot of it time that would be downtime otherwise? Yes, maybe. But then, but even your downtime, you know, how do you spend that time? And are these devices providing so many distractions and so many things that you could be spending that time on that you end up sucked into those instead of, you know, quote, other more productive things you could do? And I'd say that's one
argument. I'd say the answer is yes.
And so that's why I'd say, like, if I'm thinking of potential arguments for why someone would not want one of these at all, other than they're confusing and I don't want to be confused, which I don't think is the case here. You know,
yeah, I don't think it's just confusing.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But other than that, the distraction is the first thing that comes to mind, because I can definitely see that as a case of why things would be, why you might not want it. My counter argument would be, if you want to be distracted, you will find things to be distracted with. If you're procrastinating, you will find something to procrastinate with.
And that's true.
And it's going to change its form. Maybe if you have an iPhone or an Android or whatever, your prime source of procrastination is going to be those devices. But if you don't have them and you're putting off some task and procrastinating, or you're wanting to goof off instead of doing something to be that's productive, you will find something. So I'm not sure it's a matter of actually increasing
that. I will say that I have known Sam for a long, long time, and he's figured out a way to procrastinate no matter what the hell technology's been available at the time.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you don't need anything to procrastinate. You can procrastinate in many ways, you know, without any additional tools. But you'll find something. It'll be television. Maybe it will be reading, but not what you're supposed to be reading. Maybe it's, you know, you'll go and walk around the block instead of doing what you're supposed to be doing. And yeah, some of those things may have side benefits. I don't know. But, you know, but if it's distraction, the bottom line is you're going to get distracted regardless. I'm not sure that this increases the distraction you have. It just changes the kind of distraction, and I guess maybe it does increase it a bit, because, like you said, in the case where you're sitting there waiting in line for your cheesecake, you know, like you said, maybe you're not going to be reading a book. Maybe you're not going to be cleaning the house while you're waiting around for the cheesecake. Maybe you're not going to be studying for whatever you're supposed to be studying. But, you know, you'll You'll find another way to procrastinate. I'm not sure that the choice is, if you didn't have your phone, you'd be doing something much more valuable with that 5 minutes of your time. Okay. Maybe you would be. I don't know, well, Yvonne. Maybe you'd be solving the world's problems in that 5 minutes instead.
I may be doing so. Yes, absolutely. I think I did. I think I brokered Palestinian peace.
Exactly. So, okay, let's take a break. And, I don't think we ever teased this time around, but I think what's coming next is Yvonne had a couple things he wanted to mention about World Trade Center construction and rating agencies. And then after that, if we have any time left, we might talk a little bit about the Apple stuff. And I just wanted to have a couple of fun notes as well. Something called Mormon bubbling. And I might have a software recommendation for the people out there who actually do have smartphones. Or maybe I won't. We'll see. Anyway, we'll be back after this. I believe it is now time for your poem of the week. So enjoy your poem. We'll be back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Analogies for Ted by Melissa Barrett. You found a typo in Corinthians and thought God made a mistake, that God wasn't real, that God was Tom Stoppard. I mean, you quote yourself as the signature to your emails. And when I first met you, you said to vote in 2020 because you'd be running. You'd foam at the mouth at the mentioning of the Rhodes scholarships, or when I'd shower and use your towel. So I'd air dry, so I got really turned off at your graveyard of used gestures. But I did like you. I liked you that night outside the gym when I laughed at everything and you dug your hands deeper into that Minnesotan toggle jacket. Ted, that night I would have slid my tongue over your teeth, but telling you was impossible, even with a corkless bottle of wine spent between us, like an echo that leaps from a sandcastle tunnel. Nothing. How do you feel about being the subject of this poem? And how most of your favorite restaurants are really just big microwaves? Dear Ted, I'm back in Springfield, and last week I actually bought one of those candles that smell like Christmas. Meanwhile, you're eyeing one of your students' chests on the other side of the world. Remember when you spent a decade criticizing my decade learning German? And your interruption each time I was making a point? But analogy is the weakest form of argument, you say. You said. You never stopped saying. Even though I saw you defend analogy at a forum in front of everyone important. You stood up. You sat alone. You're so independent, you tease, and praised the comparison of a skyline to one cracked lentil. Well, I want to compare a nest of wet shoelaces to your recitation of Chris Rock's stand-up, or the sincerity of your smile to a bedspread hyacinth, or our entire relationship to the guy in the back seat who reads every road sign aloud in a slow, sarcastic voice. Ted, I would have written a mass email about you getting cancer, too. I would have given up giving up meat just so we could go to the drive-thru together. We did once. I was appalled. But you made my sisters laugh, and you paid for our airport parking, and you look pretty good in a navy blue toggle jacket. You also taught me to listen, because your voicemails are unending, because I've been socialized to talk only when no one else is. Dear Ted, I'm 25, and my ears are tired, my spacebar is tired. Do you remember that morning I drove by and saw you lumped against my front lawn, arms thrown up and abandoned? You were tired. You were waiting for me, much like these lines. 3 years, I've wanted to say. Dear Ted, that morning you were crying over Katrina and Aubrey and probably later Saori, dewy-eyed and grass-stained but never totally unraveled because there's always some piece of you kept back, a distance no one has measured, and that's the real reason I saw you that morning and still drove by. Because I think I know what you thought you were feeling.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, Yvonne. World Trade Center.
Well, I've got to say this. Now, screw the World Trade Center right now. I'm kind of piqued at your interest. What the hell is that Mormon bubbling you were talking about?
Okay, so this is just an amusing thing. And so I'll give the setup, and then after I give the setup, Yvonne, you can Google it and go find yourself some examples. But Mormons
have a fairly strict moral code. Now, of course, as with any religion, some people are stricter than others. But, you know, like...
Yes, so I've heard.
So you've heard, says Yvonne, the strict practicing Catholic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so among the prohibitions you may have heard, no alcohol, I believe not even any caffeine. Caffeine's not allowed because it's a drug.
I heard that caffeine was frowned upon. Yes, yep.
And there are a bunch of other things that they're supposed to do in terms of keeping themselves, completely wholesome and stuff. One of those prohibitions, and this should not be a surprising one to anybody, is no porn.
Mm-hmm.
So Mormon,
not surprised.
Mormon bubbling is one. Enterprising young Mormons' solution to the porn prohibition. So go ahead and Google now. But what this is taking pictures which are allowed, such as maybe a slightly revealing bikini picture or whatever, and inserting bubbles over the picture that cover up anything that isn't bare skin. So that your mind fills in the rest of the picture.
And that's okay?
And that's apparently okay. Because you're not actually seeing any of the naughty parts. And of course, I'm using naughty in quotes, but you know.
Okay, so let me see.
So go ahead and Google and take a look at some of these.
Okay, I also love bubbling pictures of Shoah. Okay, I haven't actually found any of them yet, but wait. Images, I guess. Ah, I see.
So, anyway, now...
these Mormons are weird, man.
Now, I will step back for a second and say, it is certainly possible that all this is just a put-on. That somebody's making fun and doing this, and that, actual real Mormons, either this would be prohibited anyway because you're still thinking impure thoughts or something, and I encourage all of our listeners to go to Google Images or your favorite image search and do Mormon bubbling, and you'll see a bunch of examples of these. This may all be a big joke, but I still found it amusing. And, if we have any Mormon listeners who want to comment on this, please feel free. I in no means am intending to make fun of your religion in any way. I fully respect your beliefs.
No, we're not. I just found it interesting that this is... I mean, is this bullshit or is this real?
And a few people have done counterexamples where they've, tried to do the bubbling technique with, various... not necessarily, various like men in unattractive poses and things like that just for giggles, but
okay, so very interesting. Well, I guess whatever floats your boat, I guess.
But if you look at the bubbled pictures, I guess your mind does the job fairly well and filling in the
blanks.
Well,
I think that for the most part, our minds are pretty good at doing the whole job to, I gotta admit that I actually like, I've seen plenty of naked women. I mean, I'm sorry, but I don't have a problem with, like, looking, it's, like, not totally necessary for them to show them to be naked. I can figure it out on my own how they're gonna look.
There you go. Or your imagination might even be better than reality. Who knows?
That's absolutely true. I have a pretty good imagination, yes.
So anyway, this was just kind of funny because it was like, really? Okay, whatever. But anyway.
Okay, well, that's an interesting thing. Okay.
Now let's move on since we did the light and frothy, meaningless, stupid stuff. World Trade Center construction and rating agencies, Yvonne. These were yours. Go for it.
Well, I guess the one thing is that the construction over the last, I guess, between 12 to 24 months at the Ground Zero site has accelerated quite substantially. many people, I mean, I think we've talked about it on a long time ago on some of the shows, but there's a lot of controversy about the selection of what to build, how to build it, et cetera, and so forth and whatever. Yeah. But I guess those disputes have all gone by the wayside so far, and construction has really started to move ahead quite quickly now. They're expecting to have most of the, you know, everything in the memorial sites that are supposed to be ready, obviously, by the 10th anniversary. The Freedom Tower and the all the and now called One World Trade Center is expected to be finished by 2013. So, and if you look at the construction, finally, it is moving ahead, and it's looking, you know, given that we haven't really. I think there were a significant number of large skyscrapers built in Miami, but they were not record-breaking skyscrapers. Given this is the first big record-breaking skyscraper that's going to be built in the United States, built in a long time, I don't know, I'm pretty excited about this. You know, I want to see this building finished. I mean, I think it's going to be really cool, to be honest with you, that to have this puppy back up there, filling the void of what was the World Trade Center. Which I kind of like. Yes, they're kind of cool. I mean, I remember going there as a kid, and I don't know. I thought the World Trade Center was really cool, to be honest.
Yeah, it was a deep place. I went there a few times on my own, and you know, to the observation deck and such, and a few more times, you know, when I was going through there for work in various ways, you know, and yeah, it wasn't the prettiest of buildings in the world, but you know, it was a nice thing, and it was tall, and you know, and yes, it will be nice, I guess, to have something else there. I worry that, you know, after all the back and forth about exactly what they would do, you know, the end result is, yeah, well, I guess it's true of anything that's built anywhere. It's just so full of compromises, and you know, you do this instead of that, and this instead of that. You know, in the end, you know, people are going to romanticize the hell out of this thing. In the end, it's just a freaking office building, you know? I mean, there are going to be some nice little memorials there, and that'll be cool. But, you know, in the end, the tower itself is going to be an office building. And, you know, and it'll, yeah, the old one had trouble keeping itself full and economically viable because there was, you know, a glut of Manhattan office space. And, you know, there still is right now. Now, who knows what the economy will be like and what in Manhattan specifically once, you know.
3 years from now.
3 or 4 or 5 or however long it takes for them to finish the damn thing. You know, but, you know, I'm sure it'll be a nice building. You know,
It looks cool. I don't know. I'm kind of excited about seeing it finished because it looks like it's going to be cool. I don't know. So.
Yeah.
So anyway,
we'll say, yeah, certainly pretty much anything would be better than a big freaking hole in the ground. And
you know, I'm with you on that.
And it's been one of, I think, the things that there have been many things that have been, you know, sort of, that's a shame, you know, since 9/11, in terms of the reaction to it and things that have happened since then. However, one of them is definitely the fact that, you know, what is it now? Like 9 years, you know,
9 years,
it'll be 9 years coming up next week. And it took them this long, really, you know, to really get started on anything. And for that 9 years.
Well, I mean, they started it. Well, let's be a little bit.
They started a few things around the edges. But for the most part, if you went over there, there was still a big fence around the damn thing with, you know, a construction area and a big pit in the middle where they hadn't started doing
concrete
that.
Construction started in 2006. The foundation started in 2007. But real progress, really, as the building actually taken shape, did not start really until last year. Okay, that's when the actual building, as you know, as you would see a building, is actually going up. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So
it took a long time.
Yeah. So anyway, let's take another break, and then we can come back, and you can tell us a little bit about the ratings agency stuff. We'll be back in a minute. Yeah. Yes, Alex. Tell them we'll be right back. Yeah. Okay, we'll be right back. Da, 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 da. Okay, Vaughn, once again, ratings agencies, what's going up with them now? Have they been once again exposed as complete frauds?
Well, yes. The SEC did a recent investigation of certain transactions. Well, it wasn't recent, but published the results of the investigation on Moody's.
Okay.
And they discovered that Moody's willingly, knowingly published ratings that were totally incorrect. They discovered that they were incorrect quite quickly after the ratings were published on a certain number of collateralized debt obligations. However, Moody's chose not to disclose that they knew that the model that they used to calculate their rating was totally incorrect, and that therefore it inflated the ratings of the securities quite substantially. However, Moody's only got a slight slap on the wrist because the securities were sold outside the United States only.
Yeah, okay.
And therefore, according to the law at the time, it was not their jurisdiction to regulate.
Right.
Now, one of the things that they pointed out in the article I was reading was that the financial reform legislation eliminates that, and that the SEC can bring enforcement action now for such kind of a transaction. However, it just shows the SEC that what it mentioned in the article is that I think that the SEC has found what the pattern of fraud that was happening at the agencies is. And that, you know, they are continuing to pursue them in order to find a way to bring action against them in order, you know, for the fraudulent activities that happen. Because in many instances, it appears that the agencies knowingly published bad ratings, and or maybe they didn't at the first moment, but they discovered quickly afterwards that the ratings were bad, but yet they did not disclose that the ratings were bad.
You know,
okay.
Whatever regulations you have a fundamental problem here in terms of if your objective is accurate ratings, and this applies just as well to audits and things like that. Fundamentally, you have a conflict of interest because it's the people getting rated who are paying to get rated.
Right.
And so,
well, that's one of the changes that also is being proposed in the regulations, that doesn't happen anymore.
So tell me more. Who pays?
Apparently, the way that it's set up, it would be independent. You don't go and pick who the rating agency that you would get to get the bonds rated. Apparently, it would be done in a way that actually the purchasers actually pay for the ratings instead of the actual bond issuers.
But a lot of these,
there's
a lot of interconnection between these things. I think there's still probably a lot of connection there. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, but the one thing is that the current model is just too direct. I mean, it's like me. I'm going out and I'm let's say the current model is I'm going to go out and I'm going to get a loan.
Yep.
Okay. Say put it this way. I'm getting a loan and I'm going to auto evaluate myself on my creditworthiness for the loan.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly such a great scenario. Yeah, I'm paying somebody to actually write how creditworthy I am.
Yes. And I'd say one of the things here is like, you know, these agents who are supposed to be independent evaluators of one sort or another, you solve a lot of these problems by just making them paid exclusively based on how many problems they have. If they come away with a clean bill of health, they don't get paid at all, or they get paid some small nominal fee, but give them a bounty for everything they find that's out of order.
Right.
Yeah, well, then they'd have money.
If there is a change, I can't like actually talk specifically, but that was one of the things in the current financial regulation form that made significant changes to that. I mean, and they needed to make significant changes to that. The SEC is actually proposing also rules to change that. The main reason is because right now that market is completely frozen because nobody trusts it.
Right.
Nobody's buying any of this shit. Mika doesn't trust them. So the SEC is also pushing some, rules changes that in order to try to bring some sanity to this entire market. So
right.
But we'll see if it works. So right now, it's still not really functioning. So yeah, that goes.
Yes, look at the microphone, Alex. Anyway.
So anyway, that's what I have.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Okay, I thought I lost you for a second.
Hello?
Okay, so I don't really have much to add to that beyond, you know, whenever you have fundamentally a conflict of interest where the people who are supposed to find problems are actually incentivized to find everything is okay, you're not going to have an accurate result there. And frankly, the same thing applies, you know, to just regulation in general and regulatory agencies because of what's called regulatory capture and the revolving door between industry and the regulatory organizations that monitor them. You have a lot of problem getting really objective, high quality analysis that can ever find anything negative before it blows up into an undeniable problem. Aww. Come on, sit up. Alex fell down. Okay. Anyway, as we wrap it up, hello. Yes. Look. Here, you can play with the headphones. As we wrap it up, yes, I know you want the microphone. The one other thing I wanted to point out that is something I've been using lately. I just want to give an app recommendation for people who actually do have, you know, smartphones and things like that, rather than the simple phones we were talking about earlier. Is a program called Simple Note. It's basically a really easy note-taking program that, you know, you use this for, like, shopping lists or notes in a meeting or whatever. But the cool bit about it is it's got synchronization with a bunch of desktop similar systems as well. So on my Mac desktop, I use something called Notational Veracity, which is – both of these things are free, Simple Note and Notational Veracity. I think you can pay extra for like, some extra features, but the base thing is free. And so what happens is it's automatically synced over the air. So if I'm taking notes on my desktop, then boom, it's on my iPhone too. And if I'm taking notes on my iPhone, boom, it's on my desktop too. And it's just a very handy little thing. It's not, super exciting. I mean, it's just a text editor, but it's synchronized across, you know, multiple devices, and you can synchronize it against more than just the two. The Simple Note has applications for a variety of platforms, I think, and they also have a web-based interface, so you can also go and see your notes via the web. You can choose to encrypt them, other stuff like that. So just a cool little productivity thing. I thought I'd mention it.
By the way, just so you know, I just put a BlackBerry Pearl right beside my iPhone, because I did have one. Yes, it is. So, quite smaller.
Okay, don't like strangle yourself there. Let me take that.
All right, and as Sam tries to have a child, avoid strangling himself, I think we'll conclude today's festivity.
Yeah, you can wrap it up, and I apologize for any difficulty you may have had hearing either myself or Yvonne when Alex was yelling. I'm sorry, but the rest of the family is at Bumbershoot, which is a Seattle music festival thing that happens once a year, and they're having all kinds of fun listening to music and stuff, so he had to be with me. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Yvonne, you do the rest.
If you have any questions, comments, choice words for us, insults, epithets, anything of the sort, please email them to applesmay@applesmay.com, and we will comment on them as delicately or as eloquently as we need to. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant day, afternoon, evening, or whatever it is when you're listening to it. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Yvonne. See you later.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.